The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, Sangha. Yeah, thank you for being here today and celebrating our 22nd anniversary in this place here on State Street. It was June 2nd that it was found 22 years ago. And I was cleaning out the archives at the monastery and I found the original New York Times ad of this building in there, circled with Miyotai's left hand off to the side. Call them. And so I do want to express my deepest gratitude to Miyotai Sensei, who was the finder and the founder of this place, and her courage to step forward, her devotion to practitioners of the Dharma in New York City to have a temple here. And there's a long history on this particular spot on this earth and a karma of the land. And I'm not going to get into that today, but just to acknowledge her devotion and that we have a home, her selfless spirit, her enthusiasm, and may our joy and our ability to grow and practice here be offered to her as an ancestor of the Dharma, who caretaked this place, this space, and that we may express our gratitude to her actions to carry forth her intention of a place where we can be in sanity together. So today I wanted to speak about our struggle to be heartened or disheartened by all that's been happening. That's been happening forever. If you look at America, there's a lot of violence and goodness, but a lot of difficulty in and struggle and hurt and hatred that has come down to each one of us here. And we're once again, perhaps more than ever, in a place where it's just hard to fathom, right? Hard to fathom the frequencies of what's going on. And we also can't rest in a place of shock. So we have to go deeper and look in as we look out and feel the suffering on all sides of the equations and how it can it move and open us. This is what we do as practitioners of our life. And I came across a quote by Helen Keller where she says, "Although the world is full of suffering, it is also full of overcoming it." And she would know. She would know. So we're all in this together. We are all in this together. And maybe we can see more clearly why Buddha and all the teachers emphasized the importance of understanding cause and effect and karma and our seeds that are in our conscious and our unconscious. And we know that walling ourselves off from the truth of suffering won't transform the values of our culture, of our society, our own values. But most of us do need a balance between overexposure to suffering, possible moral injury and outrage and responsible, wise, and compassionate engagement as we sit in these charnel grounds. And I use the word charnel ground because let me tell you what it means in how the Buddhists use the image of the charnel ground, just as a metaphor for harsh reality of human life. It smells, it bleeds, it's full of unpredictability, but at the same time, it is self-radiant wisdom. And Pema Chodron says, the charnel ground of our ordinary life is the working basis for attaining enlightenment, for awakening. Nothing can make this okay. It takes a very keen inner discernment, feeling the power of a community of support and feedback from those who are not off balance to face this kind of violence. So what are those connections that are not off balance that we can turn to help support us? We practice to feel all of it. And the possibility that we may not separate. We can't separate this out to those over there and then those over there, because it's all of us. We're all connected to everything. Everything. And it disempowers us to do that, I feel like, in myself. I think it's safe to say that most of us already have an overwhelmed child inside. It's in our DNA of what our ancestors went through. We have that print. We have really good things, really loving things that come through, and also some things that were not so good come through. And here we are, here you are, finding your way to the Dharma, to practice. So we carry both goodness and love and also much seeds of hatred and suffering. And as a child, we don't have discernment. We didn't. We just feel. And it could be quite overwhelming. So when something like this happens, there it is. It goes right to that overwhelm that we're already carrying. So just to respect that. That's all valid and should be respected. And that makes us develop a kind of mind that says, get a grip on your heart. Just get a grip, protect it, right? So, how do we proceed with moral sensitivity and moral nerve and balance? It's not easy, but really it's necessary. I feel like the way is to be absolutely, irredeemably heartbroken. Just let it break. That means you're connected. Don't get lost, but we let it break us. Open the space of what we had to not feel, not to protect, as you can, as you can. You know, how many people told us, like, hold it together? I suggest you take some place where you don't have to hold it together. And you can just sob and weep. And I hope we can just hold each other in that together. Because grief moves on. Just don't solidify around a story. That's what we're looking at when we sit down and something comes up that feels so emotionally impactful and strong, that if we just release the story and experience the sensations see what has come in and acknowledge it, we can actually have it keep moving but not ignore, not deny, it's valid, not supply, not keep the whole thing going. It takes a lot of trust, enormous trust, right? So if you're just starting today, and this is your first time, you're just beginning to develop trust in yourself, right? And that keeps growing over time. But to me, it turns out to be that is very helpful to be irredeemably heartbroken. And then to also get hold of our senses. Look up at the sky. Look at the trees. Experience the beauty, the miraculous display of the summer season that we're having as we move into it in full force. Smell the roses. They're growing all over. Do you see them? Like, just take time and you get a real rose growing in the city. Just smell the rose. Take that in. That's there too. Let the warm rain touch your skin out of the head. Feel yourself close to the earth. It's hard here in the city. I have to find those things. It's here. Someone asked, how can we hold the beauty and love in our life and the deep human suffering? How can they be together? It's not a contradiction. It is possible. We're not one thing. It's not just one thing. And then someone wrote me after the vigil and said, it is beautiful to sit together. We had a vigil on Friday night just to sit together. It is beautiful to sit together and to hold the trembling. I was like, there it is. It's beautiful to sit together and to hold the trembling. Just tremble if we need to. And every time our mind tells us, this is because of poor gun control, or this world is rotten and terrible, or it's my parents didn't allow me to or didn't give me, and I had to ignore it in order to survive. Or if we had better mental health care, we could help people before they explode into violence. I just, at those times, just ask my mind, wait, please wait. I ask my mind to please wait. It's not that you or me shouldn't act, but one should in ways feel called. But before we act, we should feel what's going on within us. Allow our heart to speak. Let down our guard. Open as we pull back that story of blame and pointing out. Then in our own way, we can open our heart valve to the suffering, to ourselves and those who have been directly involved. Because we know these are not just stories on the news anymore. If our heart is open, we resonate with the human fate. And we're not just isolating their fate. We're making space for the truth of our feelings and our connection. And that's essential for keeping our heart healthy and finding a wise response in this complexity. The pain is valid. The grief is valid. The anger, fear, and emotional exhaustion are all valid. And maybe that will spur us into what we're called to do, whatever that action is. If it's just practice, give money or resources, help someone. And I was watching a TED talk of someone who said, I was going to be a shooter. It's an interesting TED talk. And maybe what he said was he had a friend that just looked at him and saw him as a person, and that stopped him. He was already, but this person just sat with him and said, hey, do you want to watch a movie? Somebody who was bullied, whose parents were drug addicts, and he was really struggling, and it was just this person looked at him and saw a person. So I would just encourage each of us, if you know someone who you don't look at or turn away from that's struggling, see if you can just lean in a bit. Just, hello, would you like to get a drink of at this corner, a soda? Validate their goodness. Validate their goodness. So in Zazen, allow ourselves to be with it all. Allow ourselves, our body, to meet the truth, unfettered, unnamed, unjudged, just being. Because this ritual of this journey is both inner and outer. The journey of practice, which means the body as well as the mind are involved. And often when we practice, both really get extended to their limits. When we sit and practice, we can drop in and through the emotionally charged body, breaking open ego barriers. Restoring ourselves to a natural state, just a natural state of being. It has openings, and then they get larger. What is this natural state? Through breath, we settle. And sometimes we sit with a kind of certainty. And many times we sit as an experience when our so-called normal sense of certainty is completely dismantled. Ever have that feeling? Like sometimes you have certainty and then it's like what you were certain about is like, I don't know. It's like dismantling what we thought. Like the world, how we have known it, is just changing. And sometimes that's referred to as a state of shock. And it can be a really fertile place to feel the groundlessness if we can allow ourselves to be right there of what is true, that nothing is fixed and permanent. It is groundless. It is groundless. How do we ground ourselves in groundlessness? And at this state of unreality, we need something that speaks to us that is not all logical, because this isn't. We're dealing with a space and energy that is not in any book of directions. We begin to move in what is timeless, non-conceptual. And we can take those moments to just feel it and trust it in our every cell of our body, that that's who we are. With no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, therefore no fear, as we chant in the Heart Sutra. There's no hindrance. Milarepa, who was a famous Tibetan hermit, had a very difficult life. I believe he had murdered someone at some point and then worked on his life. And he referred to this disruption, when we don't know the world as we had before, as a great happening. He says, the precious pot containing my riches becomes my teacher in the moment it breaks. I was reading a preamble to a book about Greek language that a friend was working on. And in there, there's that word, gnosko, gnosko. You familiar with that? Means to come to know. The recognition of what is true by experience. And I was feeling how true that is and how much patience it requires to recognize what is true by our experience and how we have to allow that to happen through time. Doesn't happen right away, but through our experience. Gnosis is knowing awareness. And she wrote, they said, gnothi siutan means know thyself, which is inscribed above the temple to Apollo. Know thyself. Know thyself. So can we facilitate that process of resting in our natural state? I'm not sure, but we can ready ourselves. We can allow for the possibility to touch how large a capacity we have to hold everything we encounter and to see it for what it is and liberate our thinking, which might be, as Vima Lasara would call, sometimes it's our stinking thinking, that we have to let go of our stinking thinking about things and drop off this body and mind, release to the new, to the heart of our being. That's what the Buddha realized. Direct experience that things are not things, therefore not quite one thing. And I wanted to speak about this koan of our, that has always been present with us, to be in harmony with things. And this is a story from the time of the Buddha that came to mind that speaks to our struggle to be heartened or disheartened in this time that we have together on earth. And it's the story of the seventh woman ancestor that we chanted this morning, Patakara, who is a Buddhist nun, a Buddhist woman ancestor. And we can see in her story the challenge of being in this place of not knowing that I'm speaking of. I think she'll probably help us with it. And the story goes like this. It's a tough story, but let's see what we can come out of it. So Patakara lived in India at the time of the Buddha. She was a very strong woman. And when her parents picked out a prospective husband for her, she secretly married instead a servant who had long been her lover. And in this detail, we get an indication of who she is, right? That she's not one who followed the rules, but trusted a knowing in her heart, right? That was big, to not follow who was set up for her to marry. And it was the custom of that culture for a woman to return to her mother's house. Oh, sorry. So that the consequence of her allegiance to her heart, her own heart, was rejection by her family. And she and her husband had to leave and make their home in a distant part of India. And it was the custom in that culture for a woman to return to her mother's house when it was time for her to give birth. And when her first child was due, Patakara wanted to return to her mother, but she was delayed by her husband in starting the journey because he didn't want to do that. And so she gave birth in the woods on the way. Can you imagine what it was like? And when she was pregnant the second time, she said again, I'm going to my mother's house. And her husband was again resistant to take her. So she began again the trek without him. And then he soon followed, and he caught up with the family in the woods, and a very fierce storm kicked up. And he thought he better build a shelter for his child and his pregnant wife. And as he gathered wood, he was bitten by a poisonous snake and quickly died. She didn't know where he was or why he wasn't coming back. And suddenly, here comes baby number two. So she gave birth alone. She sheltered her newborn and her other child with her body as the storm raged on. And in grief over her husband's disappearance, she began looking for him, did find him, and then was just, of course, crushed because he was dead. And she realized that she and her children might not be welcome in this village to go back. So her only option was to proceed to her parents' home and beg to be welcomed. And to get there, you may know the story, she had to cross a large river, which of course now was swollen with a torrent of rain, of water from the storm. It had risen quite a bit. And she was unable to make this crossing with both children. So she told the toddler to stay put and entered the water carrying the newborn. And she crossed the river, got it safe to the other side, put it in a little nest of grass, and went back for the other child. But when she reached mid-river, she saw a hawk fly by and swoop down and pick up her baby and began carrying it away as his prey, as their prey. And she cried out for the hawk to release it, but it didn't. And the child on the other shore thought she was saying, "Come." And the child took a step and got swept away and drowned. So Patakara is brought to a level of sadness so low, it's hard to imagine. And somehow she made her way out of the river and continued walking toward her old home. And along the way, she met someone from her town and asked them about her family. And this person told her that during the storm, her family's house collapsed and they were all killed. This is the story that's come down. And she went mad with grief and could no longer protect herself. She wandered naked, disheveled, disoriented. So far, this story's largely about what's happening to Patakara, right? So let's look now at what she's doing instead. Because sometimes we just look at what's happening. But what are we doing? Let's look at what we're doing. Look at what you're doing. We're now sitting. Possibly living in accord with our heart for coming here. Sitting on our cushion, turning the light around, entering, sitting, persevering, facing with our wild, untamed mind. And she too lived according to her heart. She'd persevered against all odds. She exhausted all reference systems, if you will. Nothing had protected her from suffering, and she knows it. She now sees through all the things that had been of value to her, just like when it may dawn on each of us at some point. What's most important? What's of value to me? And we ask that question. She's starting to see it. No one can get near her. She sees every offer of false hope for what it is. I'll take care of you. It's no longer a promise she can believe. I'll be there for you. She knew that no one could guarantee that. All the games were over. In the deepest sense, she is naked. She is feeling naked. So Pottakara is unwilling to organize herself to fit into the culture. Allowing herself to be with it all. She doesn't know this, but she is. Allowing her body to possibly meet the truth. Unfettered, unnamed, unjudged, just being, just naked. She had no strength to hold it together. And she kept wandering. Unbeknownst to her, she came upon the Jetta Grove where the Buddha was teaching. And she walked in, and even Buddha's disciples found her threatening and frightening. And they started to want her to leave. And Buddha said, when Buddha saw her, it said he rose. He was teaching, and he rose and followed her. And he placed himself in her path. And when they met, he said, sister, it is time for you to recover your presence of mind. Come to your senses. It seems like that was an electric shock she was ready for. Come to your senses. Just come to your senses. Feel all you're feeling, all you've been through. Yes, yes, yes. Come to your senses. And she suddenly realized she didn't have anything on. She accepted a cloak to cover herself. And then she asked the Buddha for help. So it's easy to say, perhaps, that the Buddha did something, gave her something. He did give her care. But to realize that what she heard was not simply the words of Shakyamuni Buddha, but the timeless Buddha voice, which calls for us to wake up and recover our presence of mind. That's what she heard. What is the call that we may hear today within this endless stream of shocks and the trembling? How do we get to our presence of mind? We can take her story to ask ourselves, what do I hear that wakes me up to recover my presence of mind? She heard her first Dharma discourse, and she had emptied herself of games, illusions, so completely that she could hear it. Can we? She found trust beyond any knowing, any measure, direct to the heart, to the sparkling brilliance that is always present in each one of us, our Buddha nature. And after the Buddha listened to her story. He listened to everything that happened to her, the whole tragic story. And Buddha told her that throughout her many lives, she had shed more tears for the loss of loved ones than there was water in the oceans. To me, that was so critical, that action of him saying that. Her life was recognized. In her hearing of the Buddha's voice, we can hear also what happens. We can see what happens when our life is recognized. And we have to do that even for ourselves. Recognize, yes, This has happened. Yes. We can't make it different. But we can say yes. And work with within ourselves, and that changes many things. Changes our parents, changes our culture, changes our society, changes big things. The Buddha mind meets us in our suffering when we drop all the devices we use to buffer ourselves against it, against our life. I know it, the resistance, the wanting to blame, if onlys. I got my list. And then the Buddha reminded her, at your death, even if they all had been living, your family could only look on in helpless despair. Only the Dharma can help you. Hearing this, Patthakar decided to ordain and was taken into the nuns' community, which welcomed her. What did she realize? The Buddha told Patthakara, recover your presence of mind. What happens when we unreservedly trust in the truth of this boundless mind itself? When we recognize that no one can help us come home because we've never left. We've never left. Patthakara was freed. She went on to become a great teacher. She had 30 disciples, which was odd, pretty odd for a woman in that time. And in the Theragatha, which is a collection of enlightenment poems of Buddhist nuns and laywomen, her voice appears in the collection more than any other voice to teach us about situations just like this and how to move through, how to keep our presence of mind. I'll read you her enlightenment poem because it does give an indication of what she realized. And it may take some time, but bathing my feet, I watched the bath water spill down the slope. I concentrated my mind the way you train a good horse. Then I took a lamp, went into my cell, checked the bed, and sat down on it. I took the needle and pushed the wick down. As the lamp went out, my mind was freed. Buddha said to her, recover your presence of mind. Recover your presence. Recover your mind. Don't know about your situation. Don't know about the situation. Just be profoundly present. Come to your senses. Open. Now. Without story. The state of beginner's mind, a state of self-forgetting, the willingness to step into the unknown and possibly take a fall is to surrender to complete trust in your awakened mind, the Bodhi mind that you have. When what's falling is everyone we love, our sense of ourself, our direction, to let it touch us. We practice our barriers and situations that create doubt and confusion and create fears. To remember these times are very alive and ripe, critical moments to sharpen our focus and our resolve of what we are trusting. It's time for you to recover your presence of mind, the Buddha said. It is time, not Patthakara's time. It's your time. It's my time. Not later, not when we feel differently, there's not a teacher or anything anyone can give us. Why? I'll say it again. Because we're already whole. Patakara was already complete. The Buddha just ignited that. Just met in that. And that's why, when encouraged, when lit up by Buddha's words, recover your presence of mind, she could. It's why when a teacher says, trust yourself, we can. We can. Buddha said, if it were not possible, I would not ask you to do it. Allow yourself to be with it all. Allow your body to meet the truth, unfettered, unnamed, unjudged. Bring yourself to the mind of trust. And little by little, we can return to our formless form to be a beacon of faith and courage for others, continuously fulfilling our bodhisattva vow of saving all living beings and include ourselves in that equation. So I'm going to end with Reverend Angel Kyoto Williams, something she wrote as an offering. When I said to turn to people who help us with their words, I'll use her words of wisdom and shifting it as a dedication for us now. For all the children who have lost your lives and may now be wandering, terrified and confused, I share your suffering with you. In return, I offer you my peace. We breathe in their suffering. We breathe out our peace. For all of you parents who have lost your children, I share your unspeakable suffering. May I take even the tiniest bit of your sorrow and rage into my own heart to relieve you of it. In return, I send you my strength. I breathe in their suffering. I breathe out my strength. For all of you children who live through horrific experiences, I share your suffering with you. May I take your fear and your nightmares, and in return, I send you my bravery. I breathe in the suffering, and I breathe out bravery. For all the officials and states of this country who have borne witness and now must act, I share your suffering with you. May I take in your shock and confusion. In return, I send you my confidence and open-heartedness. Breathe in their suffering. Breathe out your confidence and open-heartedness. Then, as best as we can, remember to relax the mind. Sit, stand quietly for a few minutes or a few lifetimes and come to your presence of mind. As one of my teachers said, we want to be in sanity. In sanity. Be in it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.